The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And our all-star today is a friend and just an all-around good guy, John Winnick, who's the retail supervisor of dining services at Skidmore College. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick, and I didn't realize I was an all-star. Thank you.
You're an all-star, and always were. Always will be, especially on the golf course. Hey, John, let's talk a little bit about what you do here at Skidmore as the retail supervisor. I know I've had lunch with you many a time at the spa restaurant at the college.
Yeah, so my title is retail supervisor, and it's kind of a three-headed position. I didn't say monster, because it could be at times, but it's a three-headed position. My main focus is running the operations out of the spa, which is located at the Case Center, first floor. And we do breakfast and lunch for everyone in the Skidmore community, and it includes people outside. But our main focus is to feed faculty and staff on their lunch breaks and students who want to come and do a retail operation. We specialize in quick, ready-to-eat, homemade, cooked-to-order hamburgers, chicken sandwiches, a full deli. We have a nice salad bar with fresh ingredients. And we do a chef's feature every day, which is creative. It's seasonal. And we usually do two to three soups and a type of chili. So we have a lot of options for the students. We do about 500 to 600 meals a day out of that location. And then we also operate a coffee shop on the second floor of the Case Center called the Burgess Cafe. It's a kind of a franchise, if you will, of Starbucks, where we serve Starbucks-style coffee drinks, espressos, cappuccinos, all that fun stuff. The kids love it. That's open 7 days a week. And then my third operation on campus is located in the dining hall called the Atrium Cafe, and it's kind of a convenience store slash coffee shop where you can get everything from a cup of coffee to buying your laundry detergent for your dorm room. We have snacks and goodies, and we have grab-and-go options. So that's kind of what I do on a day-to-day operations. And, keeps me busy.
Yeah, it really does, because I've been out having lunch with you, and you're always up and down. I didn't realize, though, the third one with the in the cafeteria. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where there's a lot of options locally here for the students to get in their cars or take the bus to go to Walmart or Target and get some of these sundry items. So we try to provide it for the students who, A, don't want to go out and fight the crowds or, you know, try to get a ride. And all that stuff's right there as they walk out of the dining hall or walk in, and they can kind of pick up anything that they need for their dorm room or a snack for later. And we try to keep it fresh. We work with local organizations and businesses, as we strive to do here at Skidmore anyway, when at all possible. Everything from, you know, Stewart's milk to their eggs, which we sell. And we work with other local companies to provide different ingredients and things over there.
Excellent. I know. People don't realize the inner workings of a college, and we're lucky to have Skidmore here in the area. And it's a machine with all different kind of parts other than just students. So,
yeah.
Hey, today we're here to talk about planning a Thanksgiving dinner, and we're going to give you some recipes also. John's kind enough to have four or five recipes. John, what's the first step in throwing a Thanksgiving dinner?
So first, let me just say that Thanksgiving is probably my favorite holiday as a chef. and a family guy. It's two things that are near and dear to me is food and family. And then you throw in football and you got the three F's, which just makes for a very exciting day. But, I mean, now Thanksgiving has become like a week-long process from the planning to the execution to the enjoyment of it and then the recovery, right? We all know that the best part of Thanksgiving sometimes is that 6 o'clock at night leftover turkey sandwich while you're watching the game. So getting back to what's important is really the planning process for me, and it should be for everyone, because if you don't plan it properly, you get stressed. You run into the store multiple times. You're fighting over oven space, and you realize that someone didn't pick up the mashed potatoes, and what are you going to do now? So to me, it's all about the planning and actually sitting down and writing it down. My family, we actually did a group chat through Facebook Messenger, so there's always messages popping up about who's doing what and who likes this. We even did a poll for what pies we're making this year, and everyone got a vote. So we really go all out. It becomes kind of a family interaction. It makes it fun for everybody and less stressful and more fun. But for me, it's all about the sides, making sure we have some creative sides, but also some traditional sides. I usually take care of the turkey. I've done everything from brining the bird, frying the bird, just do your basic classic rub and roast. And I always try to change that up too every year, but then there's the popular request to do it, you know, one way or the other. So that's pretty much the first step is the planning, and I actually have a few ideas on that too.
Can I ask you a question before we go?
Sure.
What pies made the top 10 this year?
Well, believe it or not, pecan won out. Okay. And I was happy because that was my favorite.
All right.
Pumpkin was a close second, but the one that my wife decided she was doing no matter what, and we have never done this, is cranberry walnut.
Oh, wow.
Which is really classic and Thanksgiving,
sure,
you know, style. And my son, my youngest son, is the baker in the family, and him and my wife are going to attack the pies this year.
Excellent.
And I'm looking forward to their take on cranberry walnut.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds delicious. I always do three pies. I make a pumpkin, a pecan, and a praline apple with brown sugar on the top. And it's, you know, they like it, so I make them every year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Know. We probably will do more pies than we need to eat, but isn't Thanksgiving all about eating and overindulging and just being thankful for everything you can
do? Well, my daughter and my wife are diet conscious, except for when it comes to pies, because we decorate the house for Christmas that weekend, and they'll take a break and have a piece of pie. So that's when the pie gets finished off, you know. So people always wonder when they're buying a turkey, you know, what size turkey should I get? Because I think most people buy more than they, you know, they'll buy a 25-pound bird for four people.
Right. Then you got a lot of leftovers. So, you know, what thing you should do is realize how many guests you're going to have and serve. And then you want to times that by about 1.25 to 1.5 pounds. Okay? So Your average bird, 12 to 13 pounds, which you're going to see in the stores, that's perfect for a family of 4 to 5 or even 6 people. You get into the 20-pound burgers, then you're going to have more people. So you want to make sure you have plenty of breast meat because that's usually the most popular. And then all your leg and thigh meat is kind of your leftovers unless someone really has to go after that leg. But in general, 1.25 to 1.5 pounds per person. And you better have bought the bird already. Right, Rick? We talked about this.
You better believe it, because I'll tell you, I heard on the radio that there's an average of 40 million turkeys sold each year, and the best time to buy it is the sales usually are the week before Thanksgiving, so today a lot of the grocery store sales ends, and they start new ones tomorrow, so you can get them at a decent price, not what you paid for before, but I think they're like Price Chopper had them for 79 cents a pound, but you could only buy two of them.
Right.
So get your turkey, because if they're frozen, that's one of the things that later on we'll talk about is, you know, how to get things ready. So
I know I'm involved in an organization where we're trying to do, well, we're not trying, we will do it. We're working on putting together 125 turkey dinners for Operation Turkey Basket for the Saratoga, Wilton, Kiwanis. And one of the things we talked about is, how are we going to get all these turkeys? Well, we did manage to do it, but it took a village to do it. And it was, you know, divide and conquer, go to the stores as, you know, as many times as you could and take advantage of those deals Rick was just talking about. And anyway, it was a challenge this year, like everything else, with the inflation rates. And I watched the news the other day, and they said that your Thanksgiving meal this year, the same one you've been doing forever, is the highest it's going to be in 37 years.
Yeah.
And it's true. Just look at the prices on everything in the stores.
I know. And I think that's why we increased our food baskets by maybe 10 or 20, because a lot of families are suffering, but make the best of what we can.
Yeah.
So about a pound and a quarter to a pound and a half per person for your turkey. So don't buy a 25-pound bird if you're having four people, because
unless you like turkey sandwiches.
Turkey sandwiches, turkey soup, turkey casserole, the whole. Why is it? You know, I love turkey, but after Thanksgiving, I think I've had it, and I don't know why, because I can have chicken every other day.
I know, and turkey is so good. It's one of those things. It's a comfort food. I think because you just look at it in the store and it's a big frozen ball. And you're like, well, all right, I got to thaw this out. When are we going to eat it? And that's the next thing we should talk about. But a funny story, I bought two turkeys last year and I got a good deal on them. And guess what we're using this year? The second one. And we buried it out of the freezer because there's nothing wrong with it. And it's thawing out now. And
excellent.
Yeah, I didn't have to fight everyone this year. So I guess I planned properly.
I guess you did. Yeah. You ever have a turducken?
Never.
I never have either.
No.
I always wondered what they were like.
Yeah, that's a process, and it's something I like all those birds separately.
Yeah,
not stuffed together.
Not stuffed together. There's something about that that's a little weird. But,
yeah.
But anyway, so we plan our Thanksgiving menu ahead, and that does save time and a lot, like you said, and a lot of confusion, because my wife plans it out, but I seem to still be running to the store a little more than I should be.
Yeah.
So,
it's all about making those lists and sticking to it. You know, ultimately, the Thanksgiving feast is more than just the turkey. It's all the sides. And that's where you spend all your money. It's recipes that need to be followed and ingredients you need to have that you might not necessarily have in your cabinets or your refrigerator or even your freezer on a year-round basis. So it's kind of a specialty thing. Even cranberries were tough to get this year.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. With Thanksgiving, take away the stress and make it fun. No matter what your family situation is, if it's two of you making everything, or if you're lucky enough to me, like having six or seven people involved in the process, we kind of like divide and conquer the meal. So it's not one guy or one girl doing everything in the kitchen and everyone else is having fun. So what we do is we usually assign certain tasks to everyone in the family, and we distribute the workload. So we haven't done this, but one thing you could do if you have a bunch of cooks in the kitchen in the family is put everything in a hat, and what you pull out is what you cook. And that could be fun, too. So you might get something out of your wheelhouse, but you know, it might challenge you as well. Encourage the people that are in your family that don't cook and they take a back seat to maybe get involved and pair up with somebody who is a foodie and needs a sous chef, right? We all need someone to wash those potatoes and peel them.
That's right.
And sometimes if you're doing that, you're part of the process.
Well, I learned a lot growing up by being in the kitchen with my grandmother, because back when I was a kid, pretty much everything was done by scratch. And she was, you know, we were Italian family, and she made a lot of Italian dishes that have carried through today. So that you can learn a lot just by being around in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, today we're so lucky in the last even 20 years, and I'm a chef, and I've been in the industry since I was old enough to get into a kitchen and put an apron on. And, you know, I learned by being involved with people that did it in front of me and going to school, of course. But nowadays you can YouTube it or watch a food show on the network. And I'm just amazed that food knowledge is out there for everybody the way it is. And it's taken, you know, it's taken a front seat as far as, you know, you got celebrities doing it. It's kind of cool to be a chef now, and it wasn't 30 years ago. It was you're just a guy doing the grunt work, and don't come out and say anything to me because we don't want to know where our food came from.
Yeah.
Now everybody, they want to know the chef. They want to know the resource of the food and what farm it was on. And, yeah, it's really kind of made me proud to do what I do on a daily basis, where food is it. I think people are really focused on it now.
Well, I mean, we're friends, but not to toot your horn too much. You do it well, and I think that shows just what you said.
Yeah, because I enjoy it. It's my passion. So I love to cook for people. The best part about cooking is watching people's faces and expressions when they bite into something and they're like, wow. That's what I don't need medals or accolades, really. I just need someone to smile and say, that tastes good.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's good. So that's interesting, draw recipes out of the hat. I mean, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
You have a lot of traditions
in
your family. Mm-hmm. And so it's got to be fun to be around.
Yeah.
Now, when you're in the kitchen cooking, do you, like, if you have an adult beverage, is it like you get there in the middle and you're having a little more fun than you should, or no?
Well, sometimes you got to take the edge off, right? and Thanksgiving, you're off usually, so you can, partake as early as you want. You know, coffee gets me going in the day, but sometimes to survive the day, you got to go to that bourbon.
That's right.
and, you know, with Thanksgiving comes stress and, you know, you're entertaining and the stress level's up there. And sometimes you have to take the edge off with a cocktail.
That's with holidays. Holidays are stressful times because you want everything to come out perfect.
Yeah.
And, it can be. Do you start the day off with the Macy's Thanksgiving parade?
We do. It's always on and not many people pay attention to it. It's in the background.
But it's always on.
But I got to tell you, we're dog people now. I've had a chocolate lab for 4 years, and we just got a new puppy this spring. And for years now, we've been watching that Westminster Dog Show. And now it's like side bets, what breed's going to win. Everybody's tuned in. It takes over football. I got to fight to turn the channel to watch the game if
You're
that
kidding.
Dog show's not over with. So,
oh, my gosh. That's
but it
great.
Has become a tradition, and we all gather around and watch. The food better be, like, in the oven, just relaxing and no prep going on because everyone's glued to the TV. And I think it's kind of funny because it would have been the last thing I would have been interested in years ago. But now it's a thing.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it makes it fun. Another tradition.
Traditions are fun, and everybody should have their own traditions, you know, because it's something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I know you have down here, like I said, I grew up in an Italian household, and it was pretty much the same thing every year, and you had your part to play in it.
Sure.
But tossing it up, like a theme Thanksgiving, I mean, there is a traditional Thanksgiving.
Sure.
And but what are some of the themes that you can change?
So, you know, when you say themes, really, you can do anything for a theme. But when I think about it, is I might want to change up the ethnicity of the dinner or the culture of the dinner and maybe kind of use the turkey as a base and then, you know, change your sides and your seasonings to match. You know, you can do the classic New England style, which we all know. It's on the cover of magazines, and it's a bountiful-looking display with your squashes and your potatoes and Brussels sprouts and your beautifully baked and basted turkey. But one year, we actually did a Southern-style cuisine. And when I say Southern, I'm talking like the South of the United States. We went to my sister-in-law's, who lives in Southern Maryland at the time, and we had turkey, but it was like, I think it was just the turkey breast that we put in the oven, and we didn't do the whole bird because we had fresh crabs with an Old Bay seasoning, and we cracked them outside on a picnic table with newspaper. That was our appetizer that year, it still has memories to this day, and the kids were little, so it was fun for them at the time. We did seafood-based. My brother-in-law lives on the Cape, and he brought some oysters and some fresh seafood, and we just kind of did a whole seafood Southern thing, which was really cool. Corn and mac and cheese and, biscuits, things you don't really correlate with Thanksgiving. I've spent Thanksgivings down at my brother's, who lives in Charlotte. And when I go there, I definitely do take over the kitchen because they like me to do that and want me to do that. So it kind of, but I try to do the things they want to have. They want mac and cheese and they want green bean casserole, and they like it simple down there. So I try to keep it simple and don't get too crazy.
How do you make your green bean casserole?
Well, I use the frozen green beans,
right.
The canned
My
soup, and the onion. There's no, you do it That's, fresh, it's the same outcome.
Yeah.
And it costs you a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
So I've done it the fresh way, and I taste it, I'm like,
That's good.
You know, the old way is still, mom's way is still the best.
Toasted onion rings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're in my cabinet every year. We never use them all, and then they sit there. But, you know, it's funny you talk about those, because at the spa, we have a sandwich called the fire truck. And we put the crispy onions on those. And the kids love it. It gives that extra saltiness and crunchiness.
The kids,
and I know you like it, Rick.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite
that's your
sandwich.
Go-to when
that's
you come
my
see
go-to,
me.
Yeah.
But anyway, those, the green bean casserole is like, it's one of my favorite side dishes. It's a guilty pleasure, you know. I'm a chef, and I'm eating canned mushroom soup.
Nothing
wrong with it, though, right?
Nothing wrong with it, no.
We all know we can make it. Yeah, but as far as it comes to sides, you know, potatoes, you don't always have to have mashed potatoes. You can do a nice scallop potato or, and I don't like to do two potatoes because then you get into a lot of starch and carbs. But wait a minute, that's Thanksgiving, starch and carbs, right?
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
But, you know, a lot of us are conscious now more than we were before. And I'm a big yam guy. I like candied yams. I like whipped sweet potatoes with a little maple and butter and brown sugar. I'll take that over a mashed potato any day because you can get mashed potatoes, you know, 24/7.
Oh, sure.
But then I like all the different vegetables, too. That's what it is. I mean, Thanksgiving is about being bountiful and celebrating the harvest and using those root vegetables and squashes. And there's so many out there. It's not just butternut anymore. I mean, you can get the
acorns.
Delicata, the acorns.
Right.
I mean, they're just, I mean, don't be afraid of them. I mean, if you don't know how to cook them, like, Google it and keep it simple. Salt, pepper, olive oil, butter, maybe a little cinnamon on it, and you're good to go. And just bake them and just enjoy the flavors.
Well, you know, the traditional Thanksgiving, I mean, probably evolved from the fall harvest.
Right.
And so they had a lot of root vegetables and there, like you said, there are different ways of making them.
Yeah, and a lot of that is, you know, people steer away from dishes that they have to spend a little time in the kitchen prepping. And when I talk about prepping, I mean, you got to peel. You have to cut them a certain way. You have to use the big knife, which a lot of people are afraid of. You know, you got to put a little effort into it. But once the prep is done, the cooking's easy because most of these root vegetables, all they need is a little seasoning, some olive oil, and you put them in a roasting pan and just forget them. Cook them for 45 minutes covered and 15 minutes uncovered, and most of the time they're come out tender and caramelized, and they're like candy.
Yeah.
Good way to get your kids to eat a vegetable.
Well, you know, I never in my life had roasted Brussels sprouts.
Mm.
I like Brussels sprouts. My daughter, who's a vegetarian, a couple of years ago made them, and I got to tell you, they're great.
Mm-hmm.
She had vinegar on them.
Yeah.
And she roasted them, and boy, they were really good.
I did a TV show when I was working for Price Chopper, and it was all about holiday sides, and I featured a Brussels sprouts dish with bacon and onions and balsamic and you know, some seasonings, and I showed people how to prep them and roast them properly and get them to taste like candy. And I got a buddy of mine who, to this day, and this is going back 10 years ago, he still makes this every year, and he uses that recipe. So in a way, I've created a tradition in his household to eat Brussels sprouts, which a lot of people just steer clear of unless you really like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that makes it feel good. We have some different, we're talking about different Thanksgiving themes. And you've got down like French. Now, what do the French have that probably French food? French
fries. I don't know if they celebrate Thanksgiving like we do.
Yeah, they probably don't. I mean, I don't even think they have a Thanksgiving.
No.
I know Canada does because they're on the same continent, and we came the same time, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But,
you know, when you talk about different ethnicities, I think sometimes you just put a flair on your seasonings and maybe treat your sides a little bit differently, and you have to do a little research on as far as the type of cuisine that they are. So if it's French or, I mean, you grew up in an Italian household. I mean, there probably was eggplant somewhere. You know? And you don't think about that as a Thanksgiving side.
Eggplant,
but, you know,
there was always macaroni,
yeah,
too. So,
sure. As far as the French go, you're going to see a lot of rich sides and cream and butter.
Right.
And sure. I have never done a French Thanksgiving. That's one that we've yet to accomplish.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's here again, it's what you grew up with. And I think if you come from a French family, they have their own sides that they've introduced into the classic Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You have some recipes here, and I wanted you to kind of go over them. The like salad flavors. You had a pear and mixed green salad with pumpkin spice vinaigrette.
Right.
And that sounds delicious.
Right. Now, see, a lot of people don't even include salad in their Thanksgiving meal, but it's a great palate cleanser. It's a light side that will really, you know, keep a lot of people happy that there's one on the table because they don't want to indulge in all the carbs and starchy items. And you can have some fun with it and really decorate the table, so to speak, with colors and textures. I mean, it's amazing what you can pull together. And the one that I just had an idea for was a pear and mixed green salad with the pumpkin spice vinaigrette. And people are like, well, how do you make that? And what's entailed? Well, you know, I'm not going to sit here and go tablespoon of this and a cup of that. But let me tell you, buy a good amount of greens. Do a nice medley. There's a, you know, everyone knows what spring mix is, so that's easy because all the greens are right there. Just look and see what's available and what looks good. Try to make sure there's a little bit of tender greens and maybe some ones that are a little more rough and can hold up to a dressing for a little while, like your baby kales or your arugulas, things that have a bite to it, or some, you know, chicory. A lot of it, you want to go with the baby greens because they're more tender and they're nice looking on the plate. Or in a big bowl as well. And as far as the vinaigrette, so most vinaigrettes, people are like, I don't know how to make one, but they're so easy. And really, you just got to remember a couple things. You get a bowl and you whisk in some vinegar, your favorite vinegar, whatever you want it to taste like. There's so many out there. You go to an olive oil specialty shop and they got every flavor under the sun. I have a cranberry orange vinegar at home that we've used in the past, and we only use it this time of year. You put a little bit of shallot, diced shallot or minced onion as a base. And for this one, you got your pumpkin spice. So you can use that little bit of that canned pumpkin and put a tablespoon of that in there. And that's your binder. That's going to like emulsify your dressing. So it'll have nice viscosity. And then you just whisk in your olive oil until it has the right balance of, you know, oil and vinegar. And to do that, to know it, is all about taste. So you take a spoon and you taste it. If it's too oily, you add more vinegar. If it's too vinegary or too acidic, you add more oil. And then you spice it up however you want. Salt, pepper always works. It has to be first and foremost. And then you can add in, you know, maybe a little pinch of powdered ginger and a pinch of cinnamon. Not overpowering. And then all of a sudden you got like the flavors of a pumpkin pie, but it's not overpowering and sweet. And then as far as the pears go, you can poach or you can grill. I like to grill them, peel them, take the core out, slice them into, you know, quarter inch pieces, and then put them on a grill pan this time of year inside the house and just get them to their like tender and have the grill marks, and they have that nice little charred flavor. And then sprinkle in a few pomegranate seeds and you have a beautiful little side salad that everyone will talk about.
Both of those sound delicious. I mean, I think a lot of recipes, it seems, maybe not a lot of recipes, but some of the earlier in the meal have lemon zest or orange zest in them. And to me, I love citrus, so that makes it good. One time for a Kiwanis dinner, turkey dinner, you put on I don't know what you want to call it, demonstration.
A little demonstration, yeah.
And you made a cranberry orange, was it? Cranberry orange sauce?
Cranberry orange relish.
Relish, and boy, that was good.
Yeah.
Can you go through
that?
Because I'll tell you, that was fantastic.
I just made a 15-pound batch of that at Skidmore.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I had a BOCES intern with us, and she's been helping us out a couple hours a day. And we have about 60 dinners that we sold this year, dinners for six, and that we produced and packaged and are going to deliver those on Wednesday to the people that ordered them. And when I talk about that, it's more like it was for everybody, anybody on campus, off campus that had email or access to the weekly bulletin was able to see that we had this deal going. And what's really cool is there's some international students here on campus who aren't going home and don't have a family to host or friends for whatever reason. They're able to now get together and get one of these dinners and share in our traditions. And so we try to do as homemade as we can with these. And so I said, I'm going to make the cranberry relish. And to getting back to Rick's question, I took cranberries and a diced red onion, and I put it in a pot with just a little bit of olive oil in the bottom of the pan. And I cooked those down until the onions are caramelized and the cranberries start to burst and sweat a little bit. And then once that happens, I add some brown sugar and a little bit of orange juice, just enough to, like, not so they're floating, but just enough to, like, get the moisture in the pan. And then I turn it way down on a simmer, and I let them go for about an hour, hour and a half. And then it almost becomes, the cranberries go from being whole to looking like a jam or a preserve. And at that point, that's when we taste and see what it needs. And it's always a little salt and pepper. We put a little powdered ginger in there, and we did fresh zested oranges, lemons, and then we squeeze the juices into there. And then we just kind of let it sit and permeate. And that's pretty much the cranberry relish. And it's so much better than the jelly.
Oh, my
can.
God. I do have to tell you, never having that before.
Right.
You know, the first taste was testing it. Mm. But boy, was that good.
Yeah.
That was really good.
And one thing I do is I always make sure we have extra of that. Because if you want to make those turkey sandwiches, you take a little bit of this cranberry orange relish and stir it into some mayonnaise, and you've got a gourmet condiment that can go on any turkey sandwich, and then you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, because I always put thin sliced cranberry sauce on the turkey sandwich at night,
yeah.
You know, if you're eating at night. But I got to tell you, that was great. What you should do is write a book.
I've thought about it. I really have.
You
I have
really
so
should.
Many ideas and recipes I've done over the years between my career. I was really close in my time at Price Chopper. My job there at the cooking school was to write recipes and then teach them. And I really wish I had access to the 1,500 recipes I wrote in 3 years. They're all upstairs in my head, and I'm sure I could do it. But, boy, writing a book is a lot of time. It's something I may do in my older years. And I wouldn't even do it for accolades or anything. I just want to share, you know, because that's all about being a chef is sharing food and knowledge. And, you know, I would like to really pursue that. It's kind of in the back burner, and I'm glad you mentioned it because it makes me think about it again.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you cook to make people happy. Mm. And these recipes are fantastic.
Right.
I've had some, and I mean, I keep going back to that firehouse sandwich. Well, that is one heck of a sandwich.
Well, you know, one of the things about my job here is that, you know, while I don't have a chef hat on or a chef coat, I still do the chef thing. I create, I write menus. Being a chef is more than just cooking. It's directing and managing a kitchen and a staff and being a leader. And, you know, with that comes challenges. But at the end of the day, I look out at the spa and I see these 500 kids coming in every day for their favorite sandwich or the burger they like. Or maybe it's a faculty or staff coming and looking at the salad bar and going, oh, this looks so nice and colorful. It's fresh. You care. And that's kind of what food is to me, is you really got to care and put your best foot forward, because you got to win customers over and, you know, get their trust.
Yeah.
People really take their food seriously, and it's not just Thanksgiving. It's year round.
Well, one of the things here too, and I mean, I've eaten here enough, managing and all the things you said about quality is one of the big things here. I mean, you make sure everything you buy is quality, and you can tell.
Right.
At the finished product.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
It's all about making those decisions, whether you're at the grocery store or ordering for a restaurant or an institution such as a college. And we do a good job here at Skidmore. We work with, like I said, local farms whenever possible. We have a garden here on campus that actually just installed a greenhouse so that we could have tomatoes into the winter, herbs. And it's just so nice to have access to that kind of situation here on campus. But when you're at the store, it's all about picking the right items. And if you don't know, there's always people in the produce department to ask. Because you don't want to spend money on something and take it home and have it be not the right ingredient, or now you got to wait for it to ripen because you picked the wrong, you know,
right.
one in the pile.
Right. Or, and it may compromise the
recipe.
The sure. recipe. And how do you do your sweet potato casserole? My wife makes that every year, and she has a good recipe.
Yeah.
Some of the people that we've had over for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. enjoyed it, and we got it from a southern friends of ours who grew up in Georgia.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure that's delicious. I've only done mine about one way over the years, and I can't take credit because I did learn it from a very talented chef I worked for, and you know that's kind of what I did when I was younger. Is I got good ideas, and when I liked them and they worked, I kind of put them upstairs and held on to them, and you try to duplicate it and put your own twist on it. But one of the ones that I did with sweet potatoes is a scalloped yams with bourbon and cream in the recipe. So what I do is I kind of like to use a mandolin, which is a kind of a Japanese slicing tool, which a lot of people actually have now in their homes. Or just slice them super thin with your knife, but that's hard to do. I slice them super thin, and then I layer them in a casserole dish. And I usually put a little bit of sliced onion in there, salt and pepper. And then while that's all going on, I have on the stove, I have some cream, some bourbon, and some maple syrup. And that's reducing down and getting kind of like thick as it reduces. I usually reduce it by half. And then I pour that over the stacked layered sweet potatoes and onions. And then I cover it and it goes in the oven for about an hour. And then I uncover it and let it kind of brown on the top. And let me tell you, it's kind of like a candied yam, but as a scallop presentation. And it's easy to like portion it and scoop it. And it's a home run when I've done it. I don't do it all the time because sweet potatoes and yams are not everyone's favorite, you know. And this is kind of a sweet side dish, so it's like you got to almost have a request for it.
Yeah.
And then you do it. But that's how I do it, and it's one of my favorites.
Bada bing, it's another recipe for the book. Okay. You got a recipe on here that sounds really good. Cheesy sausage cornbread.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds really good. and that's that's now we're moving from the vegetable
sure.
side that we talked about.
Yeah.
And potato sides. Mm-hmm. And now we're going into some additional sides that
sure.
you can add in.
So, you know, cornbread is one of my favorites. You know, everyone likes their yeasty, doughy rolls, you know, your Parker House rolls that are fluffy and light and really delicious. And I'm certainly a fan, but cornbread to me screams Thanksgiving. I usually like to have it in some capacity, and sometimes I'll just, buy a good cornbread and dry it out in the oven and crumble it and use it as a stuffing base, which is really good. Actually, that's what we did here at Skidmore for those meals I was talking about. But if you're just making a cornbread, you can cheat certainly with cornbread. The box mixture is great. You can just add to it. It's one of those things you don't have to go out and buy cornmeal if you don't have it. You can just buy the box, and then you can start adding to it because cornbread's resilient. It's a quick bread, so you can add items to it as long as you're not adding, you know, moisture or extra fat that's going to screw up the structure of the bread. You can certainly just take a mix or make a homemade cornbread and then sweat down or cook up and crumble some sausage, your favorite like spicy sausage or andouille or chorizo, whatever you're into. Crumble it up and then cool it down. That's important because you don't want to put a hot item into a prepared cornbread mixture. That's going to screw everything up as far as the structure. So a little bit of planning and preparation in there. And then great, you know, some smoked cheese in there or your favorite sharp cheddar, whatever you're into. and then incorporate that, fold it in, and then put that in the loaf pan and bake it, and you have cornbread, you know, to the next degree, which is surely going to be a favorite. And when I do cornbread, I like to make homemade, but like I said, you can certainly get a good, there's some good quality box ones out there that all you add is an egg and water to it.
Right.
Or I like to use buttermilk because that's just one of my favorite flavors, and I think it lends itself to a cornbread. But you can mix and match and get creative. And like I said, there's a lot of great ideas online for recipes. But following a recipe, a lot of times, unless you're baking, of course, because that's more of a science and it's hard to mess around with that. But most recipes are just a guide. And, you know, if you're creative and want to do something different, feel free, because that's how cookbooks are written.
Sure.
That's how ideas come to pass.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you may create a dish that you incorporate every year as a tradition.
Exactly.
You know, you mentioned the cornbread, box cornbread. You know, that's a very reasonable price item.
It's usually less than $2.
Right. Or sometimes the one that I'm thinking of, you get three boxes for $1.
I know the one you're talking about.
And
nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that one, no. And then add, like you said, add your own ingredients. Have you ever heard of cream cheese dinner rolls?
Nope.
I saw a recipe online. Mm-hmm. I was online. Every once in a while, you get something pop up from one of the sites. And you get the roll, the tube of...
The crescent rolls.
The crescent rolls.
Yeah.
And you shape them round, and then you put a spoonful of blueberries, but you mix
the cream cheese.
And then it bakes into a ball. And
I
was going to try that.
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, Thanksgiving used to just be about the turkey dinner.
Yeah.
But now we're planning, like, the brunch or the breakfast.
Yeah.
And what you're saying, it would be a great breakfast item.
Yeah.
You know, as a roll alternative or a muffin alternative, if you will. And one of our traditions, and it's kind of started over the years, is because we used to eat early on our Thanksgiving, you know, 1 o'clock. To me, that's not my favorite time of day to have a big, you know, sit-down meal. But, you know, it kind of was tradition years ago. And now that we've gotten older and the kids are grown up, you know, Thanksgiving's more the dinner, the meal. So, you know, everyone's up early now. And it's like, okay, what's for breakfast? Oh, we don't want to eat heavy. But, you know, it doesn't have to be heavy, but it can be fun.
Yeah.
And it can be more than just eggs and bacon and toast. So, you know, we all are contributing to the breakfast, too. My mother-in-law is making a nice baked stuff, French toast, and, you know, it's just, I'm going to make pumpkin pancakes the next day for Friday, for Black Friday celebration.
Well, that's
before
nice.
Everyone hits the stores. You got to have a nice full belly, right?
That's right.
I'm doing pumpkin spiced pancakes on the griddle with smokehouse bacon.
Well, that's so neat. I know my wife.
I take reservations if you guys want to come over.
Yeah, really. reservations, you can call... But you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM, Skidmore Radio, and if you want to call in, ask John a question, 518-580-5783. My wife started making for Christmas a breakfast casserole, and now that's kind of incorporated in. And like you say, you try these things, and you either can or you don't want to incorporate them in, but that's pretty neat. Gravy. Let's talk about some gravy now. We got the potatoes and the condiments and...
What are you going to put on all that? Well, gravy, of course.
That's right.
And gravy scares everybody because you don't want lumps or you do want lumps or I don't know. Gravy is, you know, you can cheat with gravy, too. There's, you know, like I said, I even put on my notes here, McCormick turkey gravy mix is a go-to. You just use that and take your drippings and put them into the pan, a little pot, and you get it to a boil, and you put it in the packet, and you whisk it, and in 30 seconds, you have gravy. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, if you want to know how to make gravy, you got to thicken the juices. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. They don't know whether to use... roux. And what's a roux? That's French.
See, that's where you get your French cuisine in here.
Roux is simply a combination of fat, which is usually butter or turkey fat or trimmings, and flour. and it has to be equal ratio. So if you're making a quart of gravy, which you don't need more than a quart unless you're feeding an army, usually a tablespoon of butter and a tablespoon of flour. That, to me, goes in the pan first, all right, in a little pot, and then you add your liquid, and you whisk. You bring it to a boil, and you simmer it. And all you have to do is cook that flour flavor out, which takes, if you're only putting a tablespoon of flour in there, it takes about 10 minutes. And then it won't taste chalky or, you know, like there's flour in there. It should be nice and creamy and have a nice viscosity and, you know, beautiful texture. And there won't be any lumps, because if you do the ratio correctly with butter and flour and cook that out and whisk constantly, you won't have lumps. All right. And you want to make sure that that liquid out of the pan, sometimes you want to strain it in case there's any impure, you know, bits and pieces in there. You can do that after you make the gravy or before. It just depends on, you know, what you're looking for. But you kind of want all those good drippings from the pan. That's where all the flavor is. But you got to thicken it. Otherwise, you're looking at just a broth.
Right. And it's not going to hold up too well.
Yeah. And gravy is not just for turkey. I mean, you load it up on, you know, the mashed potatoes and the stuffing. And
sure.
Yeah.
Dip your roll in it.
I think Rick dips his sandwich in it later, maybe. I don't know if he does that or not.
I probably do. Or it's open-faced, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, turkey gravy should not be something you get scared of. It's really easy to make, and it's kind of the last thing you do right before you put everything on the table.
Right. You had some things to add to the gravy, like savory rum. Is there any other kind of rum? apple sage version.
Sure.
Cranberry sauce. And we're not talking about a whole can.
Right.
Just for a little flavoring.
Sure, yeah.
And so there's different things that you can use for...
It's all about being flavored, flavor profile. If you're going to brine your turkey, you know, brine, we didn't talk about it, but brining is more, you know, taking the bird and submerging it in a solution of water and salt, and usually there's some sweet aspects to it, and the sweet aspect could be maple syrup or brown sugar. And if you do that to the bird, you're going to have those flavors, and then maybe you want to accentuate it with your gravy, and that's where you can sneak in a drop or two of maple or some bourbon, and sure, then you get that little extra something that, you know, enhances the flavor profile of the entire bird and,
right,
and the gravy goes
and
with
the
it.
More the rum or brandy or things that you use, you could be like Julia Childs, and for every amount you put in,
yeah,
the recipe, you take yourself.
That's right.
And but one of the things that I think, John, that you've shown during the show here is to be creative. Don't be afraid to be creative.
Exactly.
Because if you don't end up not really thinking it's your number one go-to, then next year you don't do it.
Right.
You try something else.
Hey, we've had flops. We've had mistakes.
Yeah.
And now they just create good memories, you know, because it should never ruin the meal.
That's right.
You know?
Oh,
Listen, I've had phone calls from, and I'll leave them nameless, but family members of mine that have called me on Turkey Day. My turkey's frozen. What do I do?
Oh, no.
And you know who you are out there. I don't know if you're listening or not, but I won't call you out by name, but at that point, it's not, I can't help you.
Well, the show's recorded, so you can tell them to listen to it near
yeah.
the end. Desserts, we talked about desserts to finish your meal, and one of the things that, instead of apple pie, to be a little bit different, mm-hmm. is apple crisp.
Oh, yeah.
And
I like that way more than pie.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you can even put a scoop of vanilla ice cream on it, or... you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if many people think of, instead of an apple pie, making apple crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Plus, it may be easier than apple pie.
Yeah.
You don't
have to mess around with the crust.
With the crust, that's right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Well, let's talk about cleaning and preparing a turkey.
Okay.
How to, here again, roasting the turkey takes some time, and you may need to start up to a week before. How do you thaw a turkey?
Okay, so general rule of thumb, if you have a frozen turkey, and let's say it's 20 pounds, it's usually 4 to 5 pounds per day. So if you have a 20-pounder, you're looking at 4 days
okay.
from that to go to frozen to thawed. And that's in the refrigerator. you don't have room in your refrigerator. A lot of people buy, have those coolers you use in the summer to put your beers when you go to the track. I actually have my turkey in one of those right now in a clean trash bag, so the juices that will come out of the package won't get inside my cooler, and then I have that mess to clean up. So that's a good tip.
So you line the cooler with a plastic bag.
Absolutely. And then and it's sitting in a cooler now, and I can't even keep it in the garage because the garage is like 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Back porch doesn't work because that's like 20 degrees. So it's in my house. And if you have dogs like I do, you have something sitting on it so they can't get it. So,
you know, you talk about my grandmother, when I was growing up, had a room that they weren't using. The kids were all grown up, and they never turned the heat on in that room. So when she baked, and that's where their washer and dryer was, but when she used to bake pies or that, she put it in that room for them to cool. And it was neat in the wintertime because it didn't freeze.
Right.
They had it on real low.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a nice nice thing where they could thaw a turkey out.
One thing I want to mention is a lot of people tend to stray from being safe and sanitary when it comes to Thanksgiving, especially when it's around the turkey. So you really want to thaw it properly in the fridge if you can, or in a cooler, like I said, but you got to monitor it. If it says 4 days, don't look at it after day one, but maybe after day two or three, check it, because it could thaw out a little faster. Maybe your house is warmer and it got really warm in the cooler. But really want to check it and then get it into the refrigerator so you can clean it. And I know we talked about that.
Yeah.
You get it, the unwrap it, take everything off of it, put it in the sink, and wash it. Just wash it inside and out, pull out the giblets, save them if you want to use them for your gravy, and then you pat it dry with a dry cloth, a dry towel, paper towel, and then it's ready to be seasoned. And seasoning is so important. I mean, salt and pepper goes a long way, but you can buy a poultry seasoning, which has like sage and thyme and other different spices and herbs. And I like to rub it inside and out under the skin. I'm a big proponent of putting butter under the skin. You just soften butter, just rub it in there with your hands and get that going. Because when that starts to roast, it's going to go all the way through the breast, and that's going to make it tender. And I will tell you, turkey is tough. It's a tough meat. It doesn't have a lot of fat, so you have to add fat to get flavor and tenderness.
Let me ask a question. Do many people still put their stuffing in the
People turkey? Are scared to do that because of the whole sanitation issue. Yeah. But if you cook it properly and take the temperature, you hit 165 internally on that stuffing, it's fine. I'm not a fan of it. I stuff my bird with like an onion, an apple and an orange, and get some aromatics in there.
Right.
Bay leaf and garlic maybe, and that's it.
Yeah, that's
the stuffing is always on the side for me. I just don't want to go in the bird like
that. I know.
And you got to take it out.
Yeah, really, I know. You know, you talk about taking out the, you know, cleaning out the cavity, and I don't know if you ever saw Christmas Vacation. Cousin Eddie, the neck.
Save the neck for me, Clark.
Save the neck for me, Clark. Oh, dear. All right, how to brine a turkey. We touched on that, but just go over it again because we're going in.
Yeah, in general, a good ratio is a couple of gallons of water, so 8 cups, and a cup of salt, kosher salt. You want the crystal. You don't want to use iodized salt. Use the kosher salt. It's a little more forgiving, and I usually start with that as a base. I don't like to go too much salt because the salt is really just going to tenderize the bird and take away some of the moisture. And then you add sweetness. You can add rosemary, paprika, thyme, sage, onion, garlic. Sweetness, when I say sweetness, you can do brown sugar, regular sugar. I used maple syrup in the past. I've even used cider as part of the water. So you take, if you do like a gallon of cider and a gallon of water, that adds more flavor to the bird. But when you do the brining, you really just brine it for usually 24 hours is good enough. That's plenty of time. You soak it in the brine in the refrigerator or that cooler lined with a trash bag. And then you take it out and just pat it dry with a towel. It's done its job. You discard the brine and now the bird's ready. You still have to season it and rub it. Like I said, because turkeys need a lot of love. They need a lot of seasoning. And that's what makes them so good. But when you brine that bird, it adds a whole nother layer of tenderness that you don't get when you just roast a bird. Yeah.
We're talking about thawing out the turkey in a cooler.
days instead of four. It's thawed out.
Right.
And you don't have room in your refrigerator. Can you add some ice?
Yes. I'm glad you said that because I just saw that online. A chef that I follow online said, yes, add a bag of ice. To the, to put a big Ziploc bag, a couple of them ice, or if you have those ice packs, just to kind of maintain the temperature so it doesn't go underneath the danger zone. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cooking the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Temperature, cover, uncovered.
Great. I'm a firm believer in uncovered to start and high heat. And I'm talking 450. Crank your oven.
Okay.
Get that bird caramelized and get the brown skin on it. All right, that takes about a half hour to 45 minutes, maybe an hour, depending on your oven. If you have a fan in the oven, I would put that on, and that'll increase the time on it a little bit. And then once that happens, you baste, and then you cover it and lower your heat. I'm talking lower it to like 275 and let it go, depending on the size of the bird. Generally speaking, it's about 30 minutes per pound. They're not 30 minutes per pound, 15 minutes per pound. So you might look at 3 hours for a larger bird and low and slow. You start it out fast and then go low and slow, and you will seal in those juices. You'll have that caramelized brown skin that everyone craves. And then you just take a temperature on it. When it's 165 internally, you're good to go. And then you pull it out. And the most important thing is to let that turkey rest, right? Because your oven's only so big. And then you got to get the casseroles in and all that. But your turkey can just stay covered on the stove or on a counter and relax and let the juices kind of settle. Because then when you go to carve it, the juices will retain and they won't run all over your cutting board.
Well, that I think when you sear something, you are lacking mm-hmm.
in
the juices.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what you're doing in the oven at that high degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had something else here.
Shout out to my friend Lisa if you're listening. I love you.
All right, Lisa. We all love you here in the studio. One of the things that before we get over, we got 1 minute to go. You want to finish up with anything?
Me? Ooh, I think we covered a lot here.
We did. One of the things
I'm tired and I haven't done anything yet.
One of the things I want to finish up with for a minute is one of the most important things, too, when you're doing this is to plan on oven time.
Mm.
So plan on who's going, what's going into the oven after the turkey comes out.
Right. We always have a schedule posted on the fridge. It's got who's going in, what time, how long, what temperature. Luckily, everything is usually about 350. Where we're going, we actually have two ovens, so we're very fortunate. My sister-in-law redid her kitchen a few years ago, and it's great for this time of year when you're planning a big meal. But, yeah, have a schedule, stick to it, and call people out if they're watching the game or watching the dog show.
That's right.
Get them in the kitchen, do their job.
That's right. All right, well, John, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Happy cooking.
Yeah, happy
Enjoy.
Cooking. And if you want John to do a recipe book, you can call in future shows, and we'll give him all the names or the requests. So, but right now, we're going to turn it over.